Late on July 2nd, 2025, a pulsating beat filled Chicago's River North neighborhood as guests poured out of Artist Restaurant and Lounge following local rapper Mello Bux's album release party. But in a flash, cheers turned to terror. A dark vehicle rolled by, gunfire erupted, and within seconds, four young lives were extinguished and 14 others left fighting for theirs. Among the dead were Mello Bux's boyfriend and close friends. Police called it a cowardly targeted attack with possible gang links and rifles suspected. Nationwide headlines branded it a war zone moment in a city already reeling from holiday weekend violence. In these coming chapters, we trace the moments before and after gunshots rang out in River North. We will explore who the victims were, the resilient community that responded, the unanswered questions about motive, and how Chicago is grappling with a legacy of mass shootings, all grounded in verified facts and first-person accounts. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. It was July 2nd, 2025, a warm summer night in Chicago's River North neighborhood. The streets pulsed with energy as the city rolled into the 4th of July weekend. But all eyes that night were on one event, the album release party for rising drill artist Mello Bux. Inside Artist Restaurant and Lounge, a newly reopened venue just west of downtown, the energy was electric. The room glowed with soft amber lights, bass-heavy tracks shook the floor, and hundreds of guests swayed, laughed, and celebrated the moment. It was a homegrown success story. Mello Bux had come up from the West Side, and now her music was lighting up the streets, and this party was the celebration she had earned. People came dressed to impress. Designer sneakers, glittered lashes, fresh braids, and camera flashes blended into the club's tight layout. A red carpet stretched across the sidewalk just outside, where friends posed for photos under the buzz of neon signage and city noise. But not everything was celebration. Some guests noticed a black SUV circling the block. At first, no one thought much of it. Maybe it was a... News of the massacre outside Artist Lounge spread fast. Headlines called it one of the most violent nights in recent memory. Four young people dead, 14 more wounded, no arrests, no suspects, and no answers. But on the streets, it was the silence that cut the deepest. There were no rallies with celebrity speakers. No national figures flew in. The victims didn't have millions of followers or media teams. What they had was community, tight-knit, grieving, and angry. Outside the shuttered doors of the lounge, the sidewalk became a memorial. Candles flickered through the night. Posters with handwritten messages read, "Rest easy, Dre," "Justice for Bree," and "We remember Nia." People came and went, some crying, others just standing in silence. Mello Bux didn't appear in public, but those close to her said she was deeply broken, surrounded by family, barely speaking. Local pastors organized vigils. At one, a woman collapsed at the microphone, clutching a photo of her nephew. "He wasn't in a gang," she sobbed. "He was just trying to live." The crowd, over 100 deep, stood in the heat, holding candles in each other. A choir sang softly. Children wore shirts with the faces of the dead printed across their chests. You could feel the hurt in every breath. But grief wasn't the only feeling in the air. There was frustration, too. Many questioned how a drive-by shooting could unfold in one of Chicago's busiest downtown districts and yet leave no trace. The neighborhood had surveillance, police presence, and foot traffic. And still, no suspects, no license plate, no leads. In barbershops, at bus stops, on porches, people asked the same thing. How is that possible? Some said it wasn't about evidence. It was about fear. That even if someone saw the shooters, they wouldn't talk. Not because they didn't care, but because they were scared. Scared of being labeled a snitch. Scared of retaliation. Scared that the system wouldn't protect them if they stepped forward. Others blamed the city. "You shut down the club," one man said at a town hall meeting. "But what about the killers? You can't keep closing buildings and calling that justice." Still, not everyone stayed silent. Community organizers showed up in force. Violence prevention groups held open forums. Youth mentors walked the blocks with flyers, urging people to come forward. Some offered counseling. Others offered safe spaces to talk. What made this tragedy feel different wasn't just the body count. It was the hope that was stolen with it. For many in the city, Mellow Bucks represented something rare, a young black woman from the West Side rising on her own terms. Her music was gritty but real. She was climbing fast, and this party was supposed to be her breakthrough. Instead, it broke her heart. City officials released statements condemning the violence. The mayor called it a devastating and cowardly act. Police promised they were pursuing every lead, but promises didn't bring back lives, and over time, people stopped expecting answers. Still, the neighborhood kept moving, because that's what neighborhoods like this do. They hurt, they cry, and then they find ways to keep going. They throw cookouts in the name of the dead. They hold basketball tournaments in their honor. They light candles and blast songs that now carry even more meaning. They teach their children to be careful. They look over their shoulders. And somehow, they keep living. In the next and final chapter, we'll take a hard look at where the case stands now, how Chicago's long battle with gun violence continues to evolve, and what this mass shooting left behind, not just in blood, but in memory. Weeks passed, then a month, then two, and still, no arrests. The investigation into the mass shooting outside Artist Lounge had stalled. Detectives followed leads, chased footage, and questioned witnesses, but no one was in custody. No suspects were named. No charges were filed. For the families of the victims, silence became a second wound. They had buried their children, sat in hospital waiting rooms, cried in court buildings with no hearings to attend. They held onto hope at first, that justice would come, that someone would be held accountable. But as the summer wore on, that hope began to crack. Chicago had seen violence before. This wasn't the first mass shooting, but this one had pierced something deeper. It happened downtown. It happened after a celebration. It happened in a moment of joy and turned it into tragedy. It wasn't supposed to be this way. Mellow Bucks, the young rapper whose album release party had turned into a crime scene, disappeared from public life. Her team issued no statements. Her socials remained quiet. The same streets that once cheered her name now whispered about what had been taken from her, and she wasn't the only one retreating. The community pulled back, too. Where there had once been energy, there was now exhaustion. Where there had been cries for justice, there was now resignation. A deep, tired sense that in Chicago, these things happen and nothing changes. But beneath that exhaustion, something else stirred, something quieter, more dangerous, a reckoning. The shooting had forced people to confront not just the crime itself, but the systems surrounding it. Why had the club been allowed to operate at all, given its violent past under previous ownership? Why were surveillance systems so easily evaded? Why were shooters so confident they could fire into a crowd in a public district and vanish without consequence? And why, in a city with so many cameras, patrols, and political promises, was justice still out of reach? Some said it was a matter of resources. Others pointed to distrust between police and the community. Many blamed fear. But deep down, people knew the truth was bigger than any one factor. It was history, layers of trauma, cycles that had never been broken. Chicago's reckoning wasn't just about this one shooting. It was about the pattern, a pattern of lives cut short, a pattern of mothers burying their sons, a pattern of community resilience met with institutional failure. What happened outside Artist Lounge was a flashpoint, a moment when the city's wounds were exposed in the most public way. And while the headlines eventually faded, the people didn't forget. Not the families, not the survivors, not the witnesses who still wake up at night hearing the shots in their head. By the end of summer, the memorial candles had melted. The posters had faded. The city had moved on. But for those left behind, the shooting was a line in the sand. Life before, life after. Chicago had reckoned with violence for generations. But this night, this loss, left a scar the city could not ignore. And somewhere out there, the shooters are still free. Maybe they think they got away with it. Maybe they believe no one saw. No one will talk. No one will care. But someone always remembers. Because justice isn't just about courtrooms. Sometimes, it's about refusing to forget. About speaking the names of the fallen. About shining light on what others want buried. And as long as people keep telling this story, the reckoning isn't over. It's just begun. Ride share. Maybe a bodyguard, But then it came back again, and again. The driver never got out. Around 11 p.m., the party began to spill onto the street. It was that in-between moment when the music slows down, drinks are emptied, hugs are passed around, and people decide whether to call it a night or hit another spot. Mellow Bucks stood out front, laughing and holding hands with her boyfriend. Close friends surrounded her, smiling and joking as they recapped the night's best moments. Then, gunfire. Without warning, the black SUV rolled up one final time. In a matter of seconds, bullets tore through the crowd. People ducked, screamed, and ran in all directions. Some collapsed. Others froze, too stunned to move. The shots came fast and brutal. When it was over, the SUV peeled away into the dark, and the street was left in chaos. 18 people were hit. 4 would never get up again. Among the dead were Mellow Bucks' boyfriend, her close friends, and other young partygoers who had come to celebrate a moment of joy, only to lose everything in a matter of seconds. The sidewalk was now littered with shoes, cell phones, shattered glass, and bodies. Sirens filled the air. First responders rushed in. What had begun as a night of music and pride had turned into one of the deadliest mass shootings in the city that year. In the hours that followed, police would call it a targeted attack. They believed it wasn't random. Two types of shell casings were found at the scene, and though no arrests would be made that night, what happened in those seconds outside the lounge would shake the entire community and raise questions that still have no answers. In the next chapter, we'll go deeper into what happened just moments before the attack. Who saw the car? What did they notice? And why did no one see the danger coming until it was too late? In the moments leading up to the shooting, the night still felt like a celebration. But for those who were paying attention, something didn't sit right. Several guests recalled seeing the black SUV circling the block more than once. It wasn't a big, flashy vehicle, just a dark, unmarked SUV with tinted windows and an engine that idled just a little too long each time it came around. At first, most people brushed it off. In a busy city, like Chicago, strange cars come and go. But by the third pass, at least one bystander nudged a friend and whispered, "Why does that car keep coming back?" The group outside the lounge had grown larger. People were laughing louder, hugging goodbye, lighting cigarettes, or making plans to head to an after-hours spot. The album party was winding down, but no one wanted the night to end. For Mellow Bucks, it was a proud moment. Her music, her city, her people. She was right where she belonged. Just before 11:02 p.m., that SUV made its final turn down the block. It slowed. This time, it didn't keep driving. Inside the vehicle were at least two shooters. They waited, watched, until the sidewalk was packed. No one heard the window slide down. No one had time to react. Then came the burst of automatic fire. Some witnesses said it sounded like fireworks. Others knew instantly it was gunfire. Loud, rapid, sharp. Panic ripped through the crowd as bullets sprayed across the sidewalk, hitting people indiscriminately. A man dove behind a parked car. A woman dropped to the ground and covered her head. Friends tried to pull each other to safety. Blood streaked the concrete. Screams filled the air. Within 10 seconds, it was over. The SUV sped off into the night, tires screeching, leaving behind a trail of shell casings and silence. The aftermath was chaos. Bodies lay motionless on the ground. People screamed for help. Phones were dropped mid-call. Those who hadn't been hit rushed to help the wounded. A young woman sobbed over her cousin, whose chest wasn't moving. A man screamed his friend's name over and over, getting no response. It wasn't just a shooting, it was a slaughter. At least 2 different types of bullets were later recovered at the scene, suggesting multiple firearms had been used. That detail would later become a crucial clue in the investigation. But in those first moments, none of that mattered. The only thing that mattered was that people were bleeding out on the sidewalk, and the shooters were gone. One of the victims, shot multiple times, was pronounced dead at the scene. 3 others died shortly after at local hospitals. 14 more were rushed into emergency surgery across the city. It was the largest single mass casualty incident in Chicago so far that year. Police arrived within minutes, but the scene was already out of control. Officers secured the area, ushered back the crowd, and began the painful task of identifying the victims. Witnesses were hysterical. Cell phone footage began to surface. shaky videos, screams in the background, people begging for ambulances. And in the middle of it all, Mellow Bucks stood frozen. Her boyfriend had been hit. So had her closest friends. This was supposed to be the biggest night of her career, but now it was the night she would never forget, for all the wrong reasons. In the next chapter, we'll walk through what happened in the hours after the shooting, the 911 calls, the first responders, and the raw aftermath of one of the most senseless and devastating acts of violence the city had seen in years. The first 911 call came in just seconds after the last shot was fired. By then, the scene outside Artist Lounge had already turned into a war zone. The sidewalk was littered with shattered glass, overturned chairs, and bodies, some still, others writhing in pain. Blood ran in small pools beneath motionless limbs. Cell phones were ringing unanswered. Sirens, once distant, grew louder by the second. Chicago police officers arrived in under 3 minutes. As they pulled up, the streetlights cast a surreal glow over the chaos. What had been a party moments earlier now resembled a battlefield. Witnesses ran toward the officers, yelling, crying, pointing back toward the lounge. There's people shot, so many people. Inside the perimeter, first responders moved fast. EMTs began triage on the pavement. One victim, a man in his 20s, was unresponsive. No pulse. CPR was started immediately. A woman screamed for help as medics worked over her cousin, who had been shot in the chest. Several people were bleeding from gunshot wounds to the legs, back, and abdomen. Some could barely speak. Others cried out for family. In the blur of flashing red and blue lights, it was hard to tell how many were hurt or how many would survive. Police secured the area, pushing bystanders back. More units arrived. The fire department set up a triage zone nearby. Over a dozen ambulances flooded the block. The victims were rushed to nearby hospitals, Northwestern Memorial, Stroger, Mount Sinai. Most were taken, in critical condition. By midnight, the death toll was already rising. 4 people would be declared dead, 3 men and 1 woman, all under 35. 14 others were hospitalized, many undergoing emergency surgery that same night. Doctors later said it was a miracle the number wasn't higher. The shooters had used rifles, and the type of ammunition found at the scene indicated intent to kill. One of the victims who died on the scene was identified as the boyfriend of Mellow Bucks. Another was a longtime friend who had grown up with her on the West Side. Their names would soon be added to the growing list of young lives taken by gun violence in the city. But that night, they were just bodies under white sheets. Their lives ended before they even had a chance to begin. By 1 a.m., detectives had begun their initial sweep of the area. Surveillance footage was pulled from traffic cameras. Shell casings were marked with yellow evidence tags, 2 different calibers, confirming suspicions that more than one shooter had opened fire. Officers canvassed nearby buildings, hoping someone had seen something more than just the panic. Witnesses described the SUV as dark-colored, possibly black or charcoal, with heavily tinted windows. But in the confusion, descriptions varied. Some thought it was a Dodge. Others said it looked like a Jeep or a Nissan. No license plate had been recorded. No one had gotten a clear look at the shooters. Despite the city's widespread camera system, the vehicle vanished into the night. Back at the lounge, the owner stood with his hands on his head, trying to make sense of what had just happened. This wasn't supposed to happen here, not again. He had opened the venue with dreams of creating a safe, inclusive space. Now it was being cordoned off with crime scene tape and drenched in blood. Just 3 years earlier, another shooting had taken place in the same building, under a different club name. That one had left a man dead and another wounded. The club had been shut down. When Artists opened in its place, people hoped the past had been left behind. But that hope, like so much else that night, was shattered by bullets. By dawn, word had spread across the city. 4 dead, 14 wounded. No arrests, no answers. And yet again, Chicago had been pushed into the headlines, not for its resilience, not for its culture, not for its people, but for another senseless act of mass violence. In the next chapter, we'll learn more about the victims, who they were, where they came from, and how their lives and the lives of their families were forever changed in just a few seconds on a warm July night. When the sun rose over Chicago the morning after the shooting, it did more than light up a crime scene. It exposed the lives lost, the families shattered, and the city's aching question, who were they? The first victim identified was Dre Carter, 26 years old. Dre was known as Mellow Bucks' boyfriend, but he was more than a name and a headline. He had grown up just blocks from where the rapper was raised. Friends said he had a quiet strength about him, protective, loyal, never flashy. He'd been there with her from the beginning, helping her push through when no one believed in her music. That night, he was there to celebrate her success. Instead, he died just feet from where she stood. Another victim was Nia Ross, 23. She wasn't part of the music industry, but she was always close to the scene, part of that unspoken support system that surrounds every rising artist. Nia was a nursing student, just months away from graduation. She'd come to the party with friends, eager for a fun night out. She never made it home. Jalen Thomas, 28, had been shot in the back while trying to help someone else get to cover. Witnesses said he pushed a woman to the ground just before the bullets struck him. Jalen was a warehouse worker by day, a father of two, and the kind of guy who made sure everyone had a ride home. That night, he gave his life without hesitation. The fourth person killed was Briante Bree Moore, 25. Bree was a cousin of one of Mello's producers. She had a laugh that turned heads, a fearless fashion sense, and a reputation for uplifting others. Her Instagram was full of affirmations, party clips, and love for her community. She was shot twice, once in the stomach, once in the chest. She died at the hospital before her mother could arrive. The 14 others who were wounded ranged in age from 20 to 33. Some were shot in the legs or arms, others more seriously. Two remained in critical condition days later, hooked up to ventilators, families waiting outside ICU rooms. A few were expected to recover physically, but all would carry the scars of that night, emotional, psychological, and real. For Mellow Bucks, the grief was almost too much to bear. She canceled all appearances, posted a black screen to her social media, and withdrew from the public eye. People close to her said she hadn't spoken much since the shooting. The loss of her boyfriend, her friends, and the violence that unfolded on a night meant to mark her success had hollowed her. Memorials popped up almost immediately. Outside the lounge, candles were placed on the sidewalk. Photos, posters, handwritten notes. There were teddy bears, basketballs, folded t-shirts, and dozens of roses. Mourners stood silently, lighting candles and crying openly. Strangers embraced each other like family. A grandmother clutched a framed photo of her grandson, whispering prayers through trembling lips. Local pastors arrived to offer prayers. Violence interrupters from across the city joined in. Youth organizations passed out bottled water, flowers, and counseling pamphlets. The community was hurting, but it showed up anyway, refusing to look away. What stood out most was how familiar the pain had become. In Chicago, the victims of gun violence are too often reduced to statistics, but these four had names, dreams, families, and futures. They were not gang members. They were not targets. They were sons, daughters, siblings, partners. They came to dance, to celebrate, to support someone they loved. Instead, their lives were stolen in seconds by people who still hadn't been caught in a city struggling to keep up with its own grief. In the next chapter, we follow the early days of the investigation. What leads did police uncover? What was recovered from the scene? And why, despite all the cameras, witnesses, and attention, had no arrests been made? In the first 48 hours after the shooting, detectives from the Chicago Police Department were working around the clock. The scene outside Artist Lounge had been cleared, but the investigation had only just begun. Officers recovered over 40 shell casings at the site, evidence that told its own violent story. Forensics confirmed two different calibers of ammunition, which meant multiple shooters. The shell casings were clustered near the curb, suggesting that both gunmen had fired from inside the vehicle. It was a calculated attack, not random chaos. The black SUV described by witnesses was the top priority, but that lead came with problems. Security footage in the area was plentiful, yet angles were limited. A few nearby buildings had cameras, but none captured a clear license plate. Some footage showed the SUV circling the block before the shooting, slowly, almost like it was hunting. Other clips caught the moment it sped away, but there were no identifiable faces, no rear plate, no obvious trail. Detectives canvassed local businesses, hoping someone had seen the vehicle parked earlier or maybe recognized one of the passengers. But tips were thin. Fear runs deep in neighborhoods where retaliation is real, and few were willing to speak on record. One camera at a nearby crosswalk picked up something potentially useful, a partial view of the SUV turning left after the shooting. Analysts slowed the footage, enhanced it frame by frame, and sent it to federal partners for vehicle recognition analysis. But even that wasn't guaranteed to help. Without a plate, investigators would need a match to a make, model, and possible ownership within a sea of similar cars. Inside the lounge, police searched for any connection between the victims and the shooters. Had there been an argument earlier in the night? A fight inside? Witnesses said no. Everything had seemed peaceful. There were no signs of tension, just music, drinks, and celebration. Some guests believed the shooting was tied to street affiliations. Others believed it was a personal vendetta aimed at someone in the crowd. But there was no hard evidence either way. The lounge itself came under scrutiny. Though artists had operated with proper licensing, the fact that the building had a history of violence raised alarms. Just a few years earlier, under different ownership, a fatal shooting had happened in the same space. City officials now faced mounting pressure to take action. Within 2 days, the city of Chicago moved to shut the lounge down, issuing a summary closure order. Officials cited the club's inability to protect patrons and the deadly outcome as justification. Critics argued it was reactive and performative, that closing a venue after a tragedy did nothing to solve the violence that caused it. But the city moved quickly. The front door was padlocked, and a printed order was taped to the window. Artist Lounge was officially closed. Community leaders held press conferences calling for justice. Pastors and activists urged witnesses to come forward. They reminded the public that silence only protected the killers. Police echoed the plea. A reward was offered. Tips were accepted anonymously. But no arrests were made. Frustration grew. Despite dozens of witnesses, multiple cameras, and the public profile of the event, the shooters remained unidentified. The families of the victims wanted answers. So did the city. But the investigation hit walls. Walls built by fear, trauma, and the street code that says you don't talk, even when blood spills. Behind the scenes, detectives were looking into digital forensics, checking social media posts, text messages, any potential threats made before the shooting. The night of the party had been promoted online with flyers and hashtags. Police suspected the attackers knew exactly who would be there and when. This wasn't a random drive-by. It was targeted, strategic, but targeted at who? That question still had no answer. Investigators interviewed Mellow Bucks, who was reportedly shaken and heartbroken. She was cooperative, but devastated. Her boyfriend and close friends had just been killed. She offered no known threats, no recent beefs, nothing that pointed to an obvious motive. Her team stayed silent, respecting her grief. The music stopped. The lights dimmed, and the trail grew cold. As July wore on, the city braced for more violence. It was the 4th of July weekend, historically one of the deadliest stretches of the year in Chicago. Police increased patrols. Officials made statements. But the families, those who lost sons, daughters, and siblings, weren't looking for speeches. They were waiting for justice. In the next chapter, we'll explore the community response, how people came together after the shooting, how the neighborhood tried to heal, and why this tragedy felt different, not just because of who was lost, but because of the silence that followed. The days that followed the shooting felt heavy across Chicago.